Welcome to the Kansas City Public Library. My name is Courtney Lewis. I'm the Media Relations Coordinator, and I've had the great opportunity to work behind the scenes with Operation Breakthrough and Jennifer setting this event up. So thank you for coming and not melting because it's a million degrees outside. Tonight's event celebrates Operation Breakthrough, located at 31st and Truce, which is actually just a few blocks west of our Bluford branch. And before we begin, I would like to thank a few people. Our co-sponsor, KPRS, Hot 103 Jams, Shea Moore is here from the station. KPRS and Carter Family Broadcasting support so many great Kansas City initiatives. In fact, during Christmas time, the radio station takes many kids from Operation Breakthrough shopping with a $100 gift card for each of them. So it's pretty amazing what they're doing. And to Shea, who, yeah. And to Shay herself, who hosts the Morning Grind with Shay and Shine in the mornings, and who is usually getting up at 3:30 in the morning to be there, thank you for donating her time to us this evening. So that's wonderful. And of course, Operation Breakthrough. When you become a parent or a caregiver for a small child, suddenly the world gets larger because you see the world through a child's eyes again. But at the same time, it also becomes smaller, because when you see another parent or caregiver with a little kiddo, you instantly relate to that person. You know how much they love that child and how much they want to care for, protect, and provide, even when conditions are ideal. Raising a child is no joke. It's challenging, joyful, frustrating, wonderful, and everything in between. But imagine raising a child when you don't know where he or she will sleep at night, or if you will have enough diapers to get through the week, or not even knowing what you can give them for dinner. And of course, the biggest thing for a lot of us parents, safe, smart, quality childcare. And that's why Operation Breakthrough is so important. Sister Berta and Sister Carita started doing amazing work more than 40 years ago. We are so happy to have them here this evening. And sitting beside Sister Carita, Mary Esselman, the CEO of Operation Breakthrough, who with her amazing staff is continuing that work. And they impact... they impact hundreds of children every day. And also here tonight, Kim Randolph, a former student who is now a successful business owner here in Kansas City, to share her story. And to Lauren Leifer, whose book Angels with Angles is for sale here, but also helps to tell the story of OB to people who might not be familiar with it. But I can't tell the story as well, as all of these women can. So I'll turn it over to Shay now to begin the evening.
Thank you so very much. One of my first experiences here in Kansas City, I've been here a little less than 2 years, was with Operation Breakthrough. Carter Broadcasting Group has a commitment to the community and specifically to Operation Breakthrough. And it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you all for being so gracious and having me here today. I'm from New York originally. Don't everybody get mad at once. And my partner and I on the morning show, we were at one of the nicer restaurants here in town, LC's Barbecue. And he said to me, "You are now a Kansas City woman." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You smell like barbecue and perfume." I said, "Well, I finally made it. I'm from Kansas City now." And what I found is that Kansas City is all about people. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Two people who have done amazing things in Kansas City. These women have touched the lives of so many in the community that it's just unfathomable. So we're going to talk a little bit about some people who know them personally, and then we're going to talk with Sister Berta and Sister Carita and find out what was on their mind when they had this lofty idea to start Operation Breakthrough. So I'm pretty informal, and I like to have fun and laugh and stuff. So we're going to keep this informal. We'll ask some questions, and then at the end, we'll allow you to ask whatever questions that you like. I told them I consider myself the new Barbara Walters, so if all of them are not in tears by the end of this, I would consider this a failure. So some of you can start crying if they don't cry, and that would be just great. So first, we're going to start with Kim Randolph, who was a student in the original program that the sisters were a part of. St. Vincent School was an organization that they were affiliated with first before they started Operation Breakthrough. And Kim Randolph was with them. Now, when the nuns ran the school, you developed a personal relationship and a love for these ladies. Tell us how they captured your heart.
Well, first I'd like to say good evening and thank you for having me. This is probably the most humbling experience, and I just love the fact that I get to sit here next to two of my most favorite people. I came from a family. My father was in the military. He was overseas, and so that left my mom here to take care of three girls alone. So basically being a single parent when your dad is overseas. And so she worked two or three jobs, and she had to go. She worked at St. Luke's, and she had to go in early in the morning. And to have three girls and try to figure out how to get them to school was not working. And I don't know how, when, and where. Just one day she told us we were going to a new school, and St. Vincent's was that school. When I got to St. Vincent's, Sister Berta, which they put me next to my partner in crime, she took me under her wing, and I would go to we'd go to the daycare at 6 in the morning. We would have breakfast. I'd help with the nursery kids, and then they'd take us through the alley to the school where we would feed the animals that would greet us at the front door. But they took care of us like we were theirs. You would have thought that they gave birth to every child that was there. But for me, my relationship with Sister Berta and Sister Carita was special.
There's a story about the day Sister Carita caught you wearing makeup. Ooh. Tell us about that.
Oh, they told you that?
Yeah, they told me that, honey.
Well, okay, so, you know, there was, I don't know how many ladies out here would remember, but there was a cosmetic company that came out, and I think it was 3WT or something like that. It was some kind of makeup case, and it had like this really atrocious cobalt blue eyeshadow, and it was kind of a creamy thing. And I was probably in sixth grade, and myself and three other young ladies in the school decided we were going to steal makeup from all our parents, all our mom's makeup case, and we were going to all bring something. So I brought, of course, the ugly eyeshadow. Sharon Pfeiffer brought the eyeliner. Denise Mulligan, yes, I'm telling on you if you're out there in the audience. She bought the pancake makeup, and we decided we were going to put on this makeup, and we were down in the downstairs bathroom, and we stepped out, and Sister Carita looked at us and said, no. She took us back in the bathroom. Have you ever had rough paper towels on your face? Right now today, I wear very little makeup. And the only reason I have on makeup today is because I'm going to be on stage.
These are the kind of stories that you'll find within this book. And, of course, all of the proceeds of Angels with Angles are going to go right back to Operation Breakthrough. So please, if it's in your heart to purchase the book, you can do so today or at Operation Breakthrough on Amazon as well. So what were the nuns like as younger women, even though they're still young today? What were they like as younger women?
Oh, y'all want me to tell all this business? Okay, so fearless. Fearless. I mean, if I had to say it in one word, fearless, and they had a compassion for what they did. It was real. It was genuine. And I said this earlier, and I never made this reference, but in Kansas City Urban Core, they were the Mother Teresa's.
Wow. Wow. How has watching the nuns in their lifetime of service impacted you professionally and personally?
Professionally, it has made me realize that people are more important than things. When I do business, my customers come first. It doesn't matter what they want, what they need, whether they're right or wrong, if I have to smooth it over. But I never, ever put or take for granted that a person is not a person. And it doesn't matter to me where you come from, what you believe in, or who you believe in. We're all created for one purpose. Personally, I'll just say this. Recently, I answered my call to the ministry, and on Sunday, I preached my first sermon. So service is what I strive to do. I want to be a servant.
Your eyes are glassing up just a little. Nothing has dropped yet. I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to come back because I've got to get a full tear. Is it coming? No? So I'd like to talk with the author of the book, Lauren Leifer. She was on our morning show the other day, and we kind of talked a little bit about the book and how it came about. How did you come up with the title Angels with Angles?
Well, the whole way through writing the book, the first thing people would say about the sisters is they're saints, they're angels. But then I heard about all the mischief that they caused and the trouble that they got into and the kiting checks and the tax fraud. And so I kept thinking, I need some kind of a name that reflects that. And I probably went through about 100 different names before. Saintly Sinners was one up there. And the funders of the organization who were here represented. And that was the title that seemed to capture it most succinctly. But it's very hard to type. And that was a real problem because it's very easy to go angels with angels, right, which kind of works too, or angles with angles. But they were certainly two ladies who had a lot of angles. So,
were the sisters different from what you expected?
Oh, my goodness. I had no experience with nuns, but I've seen a lot of Fellini movies. So, and that was my picture. And my husband grew up, was the product of the Catholic school system. So my picture was that they were either rapping some kid's knuckles with a ruler or they were engaging in quiet prayer and reflection. And when I first met them, Sister Berta sounded a little bit like Groucho Marx. She was doing one of her routines about kids and dogs and who's easier to get placed and adopted out. And then I see a picture of her in the office, and they're on a Harley Davidson, which was one of the fundraising events. So I would say they were completely different than anything I imagined. And they not only changed my perception of nuns, but they dramatically changed my perception of what it means to live in poverty. I was one of the people that perhaps Sister Berta railed against, who, you know, would give out an apple to a poor person, and when they turned it down, I would feel smug. Oh, well, they just, you know, they wanted something unhealthy. But it was the sisters that told me, well, they may not have had the dental care that you had and could not even eat an apple. And that was just one of 100 points that really opened my eyes.
I have so many more questions for you, but I kind of want to talk with the sisters for a minute, and then I'll come back to you, and just let me know if you're feeling verklempt at all, and then I'll just swing right back. We'll get the tears, and we'll move on. But Sister Berta, can you tell us what brought you ladies to Kansas City?
What'd you say?
What brought you to Kansas City?
Well, this makes me believe we're something, but we've just been regular people who have done our part in this city and tried to make life better for some families. And that's really what we strive to do.
Wonderful. Sister Carita?
I just think that it's remarkable that in this day and age, when we are coping with so many ups and downs in our daily lives, that we are struggling the way we do and come out and be the winners, that hopefully each night we can say, well, another day, another dime, we've conquered another task for the day.
Thank you. Lauren, through your research and talking with different people, I got a chance to look through the book. Can you detail the story of how the ladies got here to Kansas City?
Yes, they both met at Our Lady of Angels in Chicago. There was a terrible fire. 95 people were killed, 92 kids and 3 nuns were killed in it, and the diocese sent both Sister Carita and Sister Berta to counsel the families. That the congregation was in really crisis mode, and they were both very young, had no training in counseling, and they met at Our Lady of the Angels. And they formed an immediate friendship. They were one of the younger nuns, and they just bonded in their belief that they were going to make sure no child ever had to suffer what happened to the kids in that congregation. And they got into a lot of mischief there, and including they started a teen center for the local gang after they got beat up. The priest, the 6'4" priest, was beaten up by gang members, and he shut down the teen center. And these two ladies said, oh, we're going to run the teen center. So I suspect that the diocese, they were causing a lot of trouble. So they sent Sister Carita to Kansas City to become the principal of St. Vincent's Academy. And that's how Sister Carita got here. They figured they were going to separate these two troublemakers. And the year after Sister Carita came here, there's a lot of transformation among the nuns in America, and they allowed nuns to go where they wanted to go. And that Sister Carita called up and said, come down here. I've got a school. I need a teacher. You've got to teach science here. And that's how Sister Berta followed her here.
Not knowing anything much about science. I learned it.
So you learned on the job. What are some of your favorite moments at Operation Breakthrough, either Sister Berta or Sister Carita, whichever one of you would like to speak?
Oh, I'll speak. When I started 2.5 years ago, worked really closely with Sister Berta, and it was amazing because we would just be talking, and Sister would go, I've got an idea. And I'd go, Sister, I can't hear that. Because we were now on the straight and narrow because we were having, a lot of different fund sources. But then we'd be talking and she'd go, I've got this idea. And it didn't matter what we needed. Sister Berta has, by the way, and I'm not sure what drawer it's in, but she has the most amazing Rolodex in that cell phone of probably anyone in Kansas City. And we'd be talking, and she'd decide what we needed, and the next thing I know, Sister would be on the phone with the mayor and letting him know what we needed, and the next thing you know, we had it. So the ability to not only continue to be visionary, but to be able to then actually make it happen is probably one of my favorite things about Sister Berta since I started.
This is Mary Esselman, who is CEO of Operation Breakthrough. Coming on as CEO, I'm sure you had some idea of what the job would entail, the depth, the breadth of your role. What has been the most surprising aspect of coming on with Operation Breakthrough?
Well, I'll tell you two things. One is I kind of want to share, because I think this really gets at the true essence of what the sisters wanted. Because when I started interviewing, it wasn't like one interview, it was like multiple. I had to keep coming back to Kansas City, but I never met the sisters. You know, so I was meeting the staff and I was meeting the board, and finally the morning came when I was going to meet Sister Berta. And they, you know, right before I go in, they go, you know, Sister's going to have a lot of questions, and she's not happy that you're the only one that she's talking to. And, you know, so I'm getting ready to go in, and so the chair says, just tell her about your background. So I started telling her about what I'd done in other places. And all of a sudden, Sister, like, slammed the folder on the desk, and she goes, it had my resume, and she goes, this is a lie. And I'm, like, thinking, well, you know, and she goes, this says you're an academic. And she says, you know our families. And it made me realize, and I think about it a lot even today, that all she really cared about was the fact that as she was not as able to be there every day running things, that all of the staff that were her, that were there, had that same focus for families to make sure that we recognize the needs and were able to see them closely and see their needs. So I think that, for me, has carried with me since then, but also, you know, even though the sisters aren't there every day, you know, when I do see Sister, she has two things that I carry with me, and one is do more and do it better. Mm. So that's, and you see their legacy every day. I mean, think about how many organizations you've seen in a city that can be over 45 years old and still have the same mission.
Wow.
And have gotten the mission right and got it right that long ago, because we still work towards that same vision that every child has the opportunity to reach their full potential, but we do it through the whole family.
Where do you see the future of Operation Breakthrough?
I'll do it more and do it better. But but actually, you know, continue to serve families. And our goal is really to make sure that we truly reach that vision and continue to see that not just here, but be able to take what we do and impact more children, whether they're here in Kansas City or elsewhere. Because I think the model that they created, where you actually integrate education, social services, and health together, is having a huge impact on families in poverty.
Lauren, you touched on a couple of things that you found as you were researching the ladies and the organization. You talked about some check kiting and some tax issues. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Oh, well, when the organization acquired its first, the building that it's in today, that was a big leap. They had been renting and had been tossed out of a few buildings, and it would created a lot of disruption. So it was a very big deal to get a mortgage. And one of the volunteers, the teachers there, convinced his parents to put down the down payment on the building. But the organization still had to send in monthly checks to the insurance company, I believe, that it was the owner of the building. And as funds were depleted, because the minute Sister Berta got one thing, she thought of three other things she wanted to add to services. So suddenly they had this big space, and, well, you have to fill it by making more offerings to the kids. So funds diminished very quickly when they, after getting the building. So they, as the account diminished, they got this idea, well, they would She mailed a check to the wrong address, and they were threatening, the insurance company was threatening to foreclose on the property and throw him out, and the volunteer, Rich Koch, called up and said, you know, I don't think you want a PR disaster on your hands by throwing two nuns out into the street. And so that bought him some time, but so did Sister Berta telling their mortgage holder that, oh, we mailed the check to California, and then she'd mail it to Texas. So that was the check kiting when she knew there weren't funds in the account. And the tax fraud, very simple. They during another tough time in their history, they stopped paying the FICA taxes on their employees, and they were more than $100,000 behind in their taxes. And the amazing thing was how they got out of that one. It was truly amazing. One of the teachers, Helen Gregg, took out a second mortgage on her house and came in the next day. They were prepared to close down the operation. There was no way they were going to be able to pay back $100,000 in back taxes. And just the fines alone were mounting up and up. And she took out a second mortgage on her house and presented the check to I believe it was Sister Carita. And Sister Carita said, I can't take your check for me, but I can take the check for the children. And that really changed. That was a very seminal moment in the history. It seemed like after that moment, an ever larger circle of the community stepped up when they needed something.
That's like a story of faith to me, you know, that they went out on a limb and said, you know, we're just going to wait on God to give us what we need, and the doors were kept open. Wow, that's inspiring. As you were learning more about the sisters and the operation, did you glean anything that you've taken into your personal life from being around them that you now apply to your daily life?
Well, there are things I try to apply to my daily life. And the number one thing is this kind of fearlessness, to don't figure out why something can't be done, figure out how something can be done. And that's a lesson that I try to remind myself, being a little on the negative side. I'm always fighting against that, and I think of both the sisters in what they accomplish by thinking about, hey, we can do it. Just absolutely, as Kim said, fearless in venturing into new endeavors.
In just a couple of moments, we're going to open up the floor to you all if you've got any questions in the audience. For Mary, how has OB changed over the years, if at all?
You know, I think that the core values are still there. We have staff that have been there for, you know, over two decades. But I think that the mission is there. I think we're seeing more and more children. One of my favorite days each year is when we see our high school graduates come back. And we can see, you know, what happens after kids leave OB, and we find out which colleges they're attending, and we're able to give scholarships. I mean, it shows that early investment is making such a difference. You know, I think some of the changes are subtle, you know, as we continue to serve the needs of our families, but we're also looking at how the world is changing. And so what do we need to do for kids to make sure they're ready for that world? So I think that's probably one of the things you would visually see. You know, we have all of our kids learning to code when they're three. We're giving them opportunities for them to experience a lot more in science, math. We have a STEM lab. So things like that, I think, are different. We've gone back for a while. We were only going up to elementary, and the sisters always believed we needed to keep kids as long as we could, and especially during those formative middle school years. So we've been able to go back to keeping kids until they're 14. And what's really neat this year is watching kids who have aged 14 who now are back volunteering with us. And when you watch those middle schoolers give back to the community several days a week, you see that what they started becomes full circle as each of the children realize that even if we are given things, we have always have a gift that we can give back. And I think that gift that the sisters have always given to the families, we see alive and well today.
Tell us what the release of this book and the proceeds that'll go to the organization, what will it do for you all as far as the operation is concerned?
Well, I think one of the things the book does is, with the sisters not at the center every day, you know, it's great when staff can see the book. Every staff member has had the opportunity to get the book. So to really see, what did it actually look like? I mean, imagine, you know, the days when they had the gas station. You know, seeing some of the things that were in the early history, I mean, really brings the spirit of the sisters there every day. So from that sense, I love the fact that that legacy's there because, you know, every chapter is like a standalone book in terms of, you know, something that happened and something that they did to move things forward. The other thing that, you know, I'd be remiss as an educator not to point out is if I didn't know I'd made the right decision, you know, when you read the first chapters of the book and they talk about Sister Carita's philosophy of education and she talks about how you have to meet each child where they are, I mean, that's what they're saying today, and Sister Carita was saying that back in the 60s. Wow. You know, I mean, how prophetic was that? But in terms of the proceeds from the book, you know, only 30, you know, a third of our budget comes from public sources. So, you know, what we do involves the entire community. And so having the proceeds from the book means we can serve more children. And we can make sure that every child that we do serve has the ability to get the services that they need.
Thank you. So at this time, the microphones are at the podium, at the stage here. So you guys can come forward if you've got any questions to ask any of the panelists.
I work at Operation Breakthrough for Sister Berta and Sister Carita, so I'm going to do something untraditional because they taught me that that's okay. I actually have a question for the audience. How many of you are children who attended Operation Breakthrough or lived in Sister Berta and Carita's home? Would you please stand up? Oh, hi. Many of you already know that the sisters have adopted 4 children, and at least 2 of them are here, and many other children who weren't actually officially adopted in the courtroom were adopted into their hearts, and they're also here, and I just wanted to point that out.
Where was the church in all of this? Did the church support you?
Did they support us?
Yeah.
Not really. Not in those early days. They didn't. They wanted us to do what the bishop said and close down and stop and do what the bishop said. And we didn't do it.
Thank God you didn't do it.
Hi, I'm Dee Murphy, and I'm lucky enough to volunteer on Friday mornings with the babies. And my question is, how in your budget are you able to hire such fine, fine teachers? I mean, every morning when I go, I walk away and I say to Ashley, she's an angel. Watching what she does with those babies, so I can't think that they do it because they're making a lot of money, but they sure are fine people.
None of our staff make much money. But they stay there with us, which is their gift to the community. They could all get higher paying jobs somewhere else, I think.
There was a time, many times over the years, where they couldn't make payroll, and they would hand out paychecks, and they'd say, wait a while to cash these. So there were many caregivers and teachers who worked for months without any salary, and sometimes as this was happening, they would take the checks in to try and cash them in grocery stores in the area, and then little signs started appearing. Attention customers, we do not accept checks from Operation Breakthrough.
There wasn't any money to back them up.
Well, I will say, if you haven't been to Operation Breakthrough, you should definitely visit, because when you take a potential staff member on a tour, there's just something that grabs you about the children, because there's so much joy in our building that sometimes you forget that, you know, we're dealing with some of the most at-risk families in our community. But you go in the door, and that if you already have that mission in your heart, it's just expanded. And I think that's the gift we have in our staff, is that they see the need and respond.
Can I just say that that's not just this staff? As a student, I remember Ms. Gregg, and I remember Mr. Koch, and I remember times when they would feed us out of their own pocket, or they would drive us for candy drives out of their own pocket. So it's not just, I think it's the atmosphere and the sisters, because once you have spent time with them, that love just moves you and it makes you want to stay. Miss Gregg was my home ec teacher. She taught me how to sew. Should have seen that outfit. But but she was there from as long as I can remember. And I mean, and that was, she loved it. She loved us. And so did all the teachers, Ms. Burke, Mr. Koch. I mean, I can't think of anybody that didn't. And some of them look like hippies. Some of them look like pristine teachers, but they all did what Sister Carita said do. All except Sister Berta.
Hello, my name is Angel Bridgewater, and I am pleasured to be here to see Sister Berta and Carita. My kids went there 16 years ago, and I am truly blessed that they helped my children and me so much. And now my son is like volunteering, talk at Amethyst Place and everything, and I'm just truly blessed to see you all. Mm-hmm. All right.
Hi, my name is Sam Bennett, and I've had quite a bit of involvement with Operation Breakthrough over the years. And I think one of my favorite parts of the book was something you didn't mention about the times when you had to hide the children. I wonder if you might tell that story.
What did you say? What did you say about
when, the when you had to hide the children from the regulators?
We had to hug them?
Hide.
Oh, well, we did, because we had too many.
My name is Joanne Collins, and I'm one of the victorious victims. The Catholic Church was not only the entity that didn't help them enough, but the government. And I had sisters. I chaired the Finance and Audit Committee for the City of Kansas City. And Sister Sister Bertha particularly, but both of them, made their request on a regular basis and said, Collins, I know you don't have no money, but you can find folks and you belong to organizations and you can make some phone calls. So I'm asking the author, did she say anything about the city government in the book? Did they tell you about us? Did they say anything good about us?
I remember soon after getting the building where she came, Sister Berta came to the city asking for money, and I believe it's James Threet authorized a study for $10,000 to find out if the organization would be viable in 10 years. It was had the will to survive, and Sister Berta, and of course he found the finding that they would not, and so Sister Berta said, I could have told him that for free.
And then she came back and asked us for the $10,000 for the Operation Breakthrough.
And I believe she got it. She got it.
I just wanted to say that I had a personal friend. She died when she was about 97 years old. But she spent about 30 years, or maybe 25 years, just rocking the babies. And she couldn't drive, and she could hardly see. But when we got her there, she wanted to know where I am and put her in her chair. And sisters, you both kept her happy because you allowed her to rock the babies. I want to tell the new CEO that all of these individuals need to take the tour of where the individuals, the parents come from and where they are every day. That will get you another check. God bless you.
Hi, my name's Denise Phillips, and first of all, I have to say that the bad news about being on that 1,800 names is that I don't care where you go, she will find you. I was an attorney doing domestic violence work, and I could move jobs, and she would still find me. Denise, I just need you to do this one thing. But I'm here because I want to thank you guys for making my family. My two kids were foster children in your home, and nobody fought harder for me to get them than you did, much to the chagrin of the state government at that point. But any government will do. And I just want to thank you. I think lots and lots of families have been blessed by being in your lives, and I got two of them for take-home tests. And Darius will still do tours. He's been doing them since he was two.
First, I just wondered whose idea was it to put this book out, to get it together and put it out? Lauren, was it yours?
I wish I'd come up with the idea, but I believe it was something cooked up between Sam Bennett and Kirby Upjohn. I think they wanted to capture the stories, and they had been so entertained by them over the years and wanted to make sure they got down on paper. And it was the project of my lifetime when I was the lucky person that I believe Sam called up the writer's place and asked, was there a writer willing to work on this project? And they thought of my name, and I am grateful every day that I got to tell this story.
That's a good idea. And I just have another quick question. I think you have over 400 children now. I wondered what capacity is, and are you at capacity, or how many more can you take?
So, yes, we have over 400 children. We recently added the three classrooms at De La Salle and now work with the early learning program there and the teen moms. So that brings us actually over 440. But we are at capacity, and, you know, obviously we could fill Operation Breakthrough several times over with the need. And so obviously that's something we're thinking about all the time.
Hello. I'm here with Van Shea and Tyrez, Sister Berta and Sister Creta's youngest two children, and I wanted to ask them what their favorite memory of their moms is.
I'm Van Shea, and I'm 16 years old. And one of my favorite memories with the nuns are, I guess, just being adopted and them just keeping my family together because me and my brother, sorry.
It's okay.
We were adopted when I was 6 months and he was two, I think. And if they wouldn't have adopted us, we would have been split up. And I just thank them so much for that. And yeah.
I'm Tyrese and I'm 17. And I just remember coming home from school and me and Berta really didn't get along too much. And I used to just wonder why, you know? And I think it was just because we were so much alike. Like, I'm super duper hard-headed. Like, you cannot tell me anything, and I won't do it the first time. That's just how it is. And and that's just how it is. And that's how Berta is. And, you know, I remember coming home, you know, and my room would be dirty, you know, and I would just walk in the house and get a hit to the back of the head. And I was just like, what? What'd I do? You know? Bert, and then Creta just has this look. And it's just this one look. She'll just look you in your eyes, and you already know it's business with her. And, you know, just like that, I'll remember. Oh, I didn't clean my room, you know. It's just so many good times, so many good times.
It sounds like you took my place.
Those are two great young people.
My name is Tim McQuaid, and I grew up Catholic and got thrown out of Catholic schools many a time. But when I heard about Sister Carita and Sister Berta, I thought, man, they've adopted children? How could that happen? I'm a product. My mother had two sisters that were nuns and a brother who was a priest, so I was thinking, this couldn't be. So I came down to visit Sister Berta, and first thing I asked her was, what did the Mother Superior say when they found out that you were adopting two children? She said, we didn't tell them. She didn't tell them. I said, so what happened when they found out that you adopted these children? She said she was furious. She said, why didn't you tell me? She said, I didn't tell you because I knew what you'd say. No. So I asked her, well, what happened when the next two came along? We haven't told her yet. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do. It was unheard of in those days for nuns to adopt kids. But nowadays, there are several nuns in the country that have adopted kids. And what better group there is to do it? These women have no ties to any family, you know, that they're responsible for. And they can, the hardest part is to find a place for the kids to live. We didn't really live in a real convent, so we had the kids move in with us. But if we lived in a real convent, they wouldn't let them, which is probably why we didn't live in a real convent.
Well, there's a special place in heaven for both of you because...
Yes.
And there's a special place in all the hearts of the people in Kansas City because you could have followed the rules that you were promised as your novitiate and went into the sisterhood and followed those rules, and you elected to say, no, we're going to do something different, and you have, and look what you've yielded. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's good to follow rules if they're realistic. If the rules interfere with you living and doing what you should be doing, taking care of other people, then the rules are no good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Catherine Snow. I would like to know if you have done or are doing any kind of reporting on the children who have now become successful adults so that you can track what the success rate is of your organization and what, and just some anecdotal information in addition to the book as to how you've helped families have better lives than what they started with.
I can share a little bit. Obviously, I talked a little bit earlier about our graduation, and that's an opportunity for us to have a touch point with our children who come back. And then there are often those that just come back to visit to share. So that's kind of anecdotally how we know. More recently, we've actually started tracking. So we actually have all of our children, when they go on to kindergarten, we actually get a formal data form. So that will allow us to actually look at what are the outcomes that we see. We currently track our readiness. Last year, for example, nationally for children in poverty, you typically less than 50% are ready for kindergarten. We sent 96%. So we know... So we know what the sisters started in terms of really not only providing the education, but truly providing the support systems really makes a difference.
And I think one of the things we learned is so many people think that people living in poverty are lazy and don't try. And I want to tell you, I don't think there's a group of people in the world that try harder and get condemned for trying.
I'm Sister Teresa, and I'm also a BVM like they are, and I worked for them for 20 years, and I wouldn't trade any of those years for anything. And I watched them go through this, and I can tell you the nuns' reaction of their adoptions, too. But I better hadn't.
Sister Berta, I just wanted to tell you about an experience I had with you probably 20 years ago. Now, I called Operation Breakthrough because we'd cleaned out our house and we had some things that we wanted to donate. And I called and said, and I was at work, but I called during the day and I said, so would you, can you use any of these household things? It was 45 minutes before I got off the phone. And it was one of the best conversations I'd ever had. And you said to me, don't you think our families might want a picture for the wall? Don't you think they might want a nice dish to set on the table? Don't you think they might want some of that? And you told me this wonderful story that has stuck with me ever since about a woman that called you to come out and look at some cribs because she was going to donate cribs, baby cribs. And you went and looked, and there were about four of them. And the woman said, no, not that one. That one's a very good one. No, I want you to take these other three. And Sister Berta told me, she said to her, if that crib isn't good enough for if my kids aren't good enough for that crib, then they don't need any of these cribs. And you walked out of the house. And so every time I've helped a relative clean out their house and they've said, oh, let's donate that, I've said, nah, Sister Berta, she's not going to take it. Sister Berta says, no, that's trash. And it's revolutionized the way I've helped people clean things out, because that has stuck with me ever since, that you don't donate things that you would not yourself be proud to have in your house, that people who in poverty deserve good things too. And it was the best 45 minutes I've ever spent. Thank you.
I've got kind of a similar story, I guess. My name's Steve Millen, and I met Sister Berta and Sister Greta in 1996. I was a member of a lawyer's organization who decided to donate the sum of $500 to Operation Breakthrough in the name of Ed Smith. And there was a breakfast at Sugar Thompson in Kilroy. Sister Berta was going to come get the check, and Sister Berta was late. Imagine that. By about an hour. And I hung around, and She showed up. They had found three children living in a car whose mother had died of AIDS, and she was having a hard time finding a placement for them. So she apologized to us for being late, and we gave her a pass. And she wanted to thank us for the $500, and she said that she had put the money to good use. And she said, "We used your money to buy Foot Lockers." And I guess the look on my face was such that she had seen the reaction of, you know, somewhat quizzical. And she said, "You don't think that's a very big deal, do you?" And I said, no. I said, "Yeah, well, let me tell you." She says, "Most of our children are in foster care, and a high percentage of them do not have permanent placement, so that they go from home to home every 30 days. And they carry their belongings in black trash bags that we give them with their names on masking tape on the trash bags. But because of your generosity, we were able to buy Foot Lockers for these children. And they could stencil their name on the Foot Lockers and put stickers on them and personalize them. And so now when they go from home to home, it's with the dignity of someone carrying their belongings in a Foot Locker and not a black trash bag." By the time she finished, I was crying, openly sobbing. And I looked over and she had a twinkle in her eye. She'd known what effect it was going to have on me. So, me and the lawyers organization, LEAP, Lawyers Encouraging Academic Progress, have been involved with Operation Breakthrough since then. Last year, we went over $1 million in money that has been donated. Every cent that is donated to Operation Breakthrough, every dollar in proceeds from this book will be used in magnificent ways. And I'm going to have lunch with you tomorrow, Sister Bird and Sister Creta. I hope to see you.
Steve's been with us for a long time, and he's done lots of things. I know sometimes when his phone would ring at night, he'd think, "Oh my God, it's that crazy nun." But he always answered the phone, and he always did what I asked him, if he could.
Hi, my name is Aaron Randall, and this is basically my sister, Stephanie Stevenson. We won't tell you a story because we have too many. I'm 28, and I was at Operation Breakthrough probably from when I was months old until I was about 18. So I was totally raised there, basically. And I just wanted to be able to thank.
I know.
This was not planned. Okay, I just want to be able to thank you guys because, I mean, I'm not like, I wasn't coming from the worst situation, but I still lived in poverty, whether I knew it or not. And a lot of what I've been able to accomplish is because of my time at Operation Breakthrough. And it wasn't until I was older and I came back, I went to college, came back, and I realized that so much of who I am is because of you all, you know. If it wasn't for you, I would not have been to any of the museums, these arts and crafts. I wouldn't even know how to skate if it wasn't for Operation Breakthrough, you know, like the field trips in the summertime, like everything. So, when you're a kid, you take and take and take and take, and we took a lot. I'm probably one of the reasons why you guys are bankrupt now or going through money, because sending 400 kids to field trips every day in the summer, I don't understand how it's possible. Like, hundreds of kids on three different field trips every day. It still blows my mind. But yeah, I took a lot, and I just want to, as an adult, be able, it's not much for what you've given me, but to be able to say thank you. And to let you know that you have fundamentally changed my life. And everything that I do moving forward, I owe a piece of that to you.
Thank you.
I'm a retired school nurse from, I was in inner city Cincinnati, and I was considered really a pretty wild, radical school nurse just because I wanted health care for all my kids, no matter what was their level of poverty or non-poverty or who they were and, or their ethnicity or even their religion. But what I want to ask is, what's your next big radical move, ladies? What is it? What's that next big radical move?
They have one.
We have several.
They have several.
She said they have several.
One of the things we want to do is expand our reach to more kids. We need more space. I think we've gotten another building to help us with that. But the more buildings you have, the more harder it is to keep up with everything.
Hi, my name is Lee Duckett, and I work at Operation Breakthrough. And many years ago, Sister Berta conned me into working there. Just made up a story, and there I am. But I have to say that we talk about all the things they did in the past to make things go, but Sister Berta and Sister Krita always did what was right. Yeah. They may have bent the rules, but they did what was right. In one particular instance, Sister Berta, there was a child that was 3 weeks old, and you can't be at Operation Breakthrough until you're 6 weeks. So what did she do? Put a crib in my office. Formula, diapers, and the baby for 3 weeks. Now, we couldn't do that now, but she did what was right. She did it because it was a need that she saw. And then when you talked about she always had ideas, I would walk in there and she'd say, I've got a great idea, and I'd just walk right back out. I was so afraid of what the next idea was. It was always good. She was a great marketer. She could figure out what was the best way to get to people. Sister Krita, I was always afraid of you because you were really stern, but lovable. But I sat in Sister Berta's office as a volunteer before I went to work there every week. And kids would come in. She'd make them write 100 times, I will be good. She would make them sit and just the old-fashioned discipline that those children needed, but the mastermind of all the organization and how she did it and how they came to figure out everything, they did it for good. And that's what we have to remember.
I was hoping to get one of the panelists to cry. I wound up crying just listening to all of the heartfelt emotion from people who've been touched by these wonderful, wonderful women. We've got another question.
I'm Carol Holland, and I just wanted to say I know a secret. Well, it may not be a secret, but if you want to stay on Sister... Okay. If you want to stay on Sister Karita's side, you just take and get her a hot dog, because hot dogs are her favorite food. And I was... I'll never forget one time when I was down there, I was attempting to teach some of the girls to knit. And I think one of them learned, but anyway, it didn't work out that well. But the girls would talk among themselves. And one day, one of them said, my mother's boss was shot and killed over Saturday. She said we were at our friend's apartment and we heard shots, and she said we hit the floor like you're supposed to, and then she said her mother came up and said that her boss had been shot and killed. But I thought, who knows besides these children that you're supposed to hit the floor when you hear shots, or who hears shots that often? And also, in the book, is there a story about Sister Berta working at the gas station and being held up.
Yeah. I think the sisters were the only two who were not held up at the gas station.
Yeah, they'd say, "Are you the nun?" I'd say, "Yes." And then they'd say, "Well, I just came in to buy a package of cigarettes."
Just a question to fill my curiosity and kind of think of everything so wonderful tonight. What is your relationship now with the Archdiocese and Catholic Charities?
Well, we still know they're there, and they still know we're they don't bother us, and we don't bother them. And so we don't hear from them much. And they don't hear from us at all.
Wow. This has just been an awesome, awesome experience today. I want to encourage everyone, if you have not gotten a copy of the book, to please do so. What I'll do is allow the panelists to leave us with a final thought, if you can keep it to about 45 seconds or so, because I'm getting the signal to wrap up. So we'll start on this end. Thank you.
I'm so glad everyone's here. Just getting to spend an hour or so with the sisters, you can appreciate, you know, what they brought to the community, what they brought to our children and families. I mean, there are over 10,000 children that have been touched by them, and so what a way to celebrate. And the fact that we're going to have 10,000 more and 10,000 after that, so thank you.
Thank you so very much for being here today, and we really appreciate all your support that you have given to us through these many years. Without it, we could not continue to do what we've been trying to do. Life goes on.
People tell you poor people are useless and lazy. That's not true. They're some of the hardest working people I know. We have mothers that work three jobs to try and support their families. And society kind of looks down on them if they don't have the best shoes on their kids. But just remember, they're trying hard. The kids get stuff first, the mothers get stuff if there's anything left, and often there isn't. So don't let, if you're in a, going out to coffee with somebody or at a club or something, don't let people talk badly about poor people, because chances are they don't know any. And if they know anyone, they'd have nothing but respect for them, because they try so hard to make it. Can you imagine going tonight when you leave here having nowhere to go and trying to figure out where you're going to stay with your kids? I mean, that's no easy task, especially since a lot of our families don't have families here in town. So, you know, give them some slack. If we did as well with poor families as we do with pets in the city, we do a great job.
I had the great fortune to eavesdrop on a conversation where an author interviewed Sister Berta about her thoughts on heaven. And she was not really thinking a lot about heaven, and she wasn't
she was looking at the woman who was asking the questions, like, what food do you want to see in heaven? And Sister Berta's kind of looking at her, and she's like, you know, well, what's your picture of heaven? And all of a sudden, something kind of inspired her, and after more than an hour of an interview where she was not having any of it, she finally started riffing like a saxophone player, so I'm going to quote her. That's my last words. "For me, an afterlife would be a place where everyone gets along with no economic disparity and people can use their gifts and talents. The picture of angels sitting around with harps is stupid. Heaven seems irrelevant to me. What we ought to be doing is trying to make the earth more heavenly." And so for the enormity of all that the sisters have accomplished toward those ends, they're saints in my book, anyway.
That's true. She said, "That's true." I just want to. There's a lot of things that I can say about Sister Berta and Sister Carita. Sister Berta, me being probably a problem child. You didn't have to agree. You were one too. But I will say this. When it came to teaching me that I was a person, and no matter what, no matter where, and no matter who, I was still a person. And I'll just say that I remember we ran track. And we used to have what they call interscholastic sports amongst the Catholic schools. And we were the kids that didn't have tennis shoes. So we would go to track meets and we would run barefoot and we would kill them. And one year they told us we couldn't run anymore because we didn't have tennis shoes. So that year they went out and got us tennis shoes and we still won. I'm just gonna say that when it comes to being genuine, what you see is what you get 24/7. And hearing the stories tonight of the young people that came forward, most of these kids would not know anything about the arts, the symphony, going to the Ozarks, seeing things that you've never seen before. And I thank them for the culture that they would give each and every one of us in the Urban Core. We love you. I will always, always, always be grateful to you. And my mother, God bless her, she has Alzheimer's, but I can say Sister Berta and Sister Carita, and she will light up. So I thank you, and I thank God for you.
Thank you. And I thank God for you and the families like you that we served, because that's where we learned the true meaning of life and the true meaning of being Catholics. You don't learn that from a book or from a pulpit, somebody talking to you from a pulpit. You learn that from living and from watching people live and seeing how difficult it is to live. And then you admire somebody for doing something. And that's what keeps you going. So, you know, if you are one of the ones that gets tired of do-gooders, don't get tired of them. They're trying to do their best. They might not agree with you, but nobody said we had to agree with everybody. Right?
Amen.
These are our angels with angles, ladies and gentlemen, Sister Berta and Sister Carita.